Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, happy Monday morning. Welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. It is Monday. You know what? It doesn't really matter what day it is because these shows run all the time and we run them in reruns and sometimes we post them the next day, so I don't want to confuse anyone. Today is a really cool day. I got to see a movie yesterday titled The Beguiled. I'm sure you've all heard about it. It won the, everyone pronounces this differently, Cannes Film Festival. It won the Palme d'Or. It's directed by Miss Sofia Coppola, and sorry if it's Mrs. if she's married. I don't know. I know people in the business use their business name and their personal name. Anyways, today we're going to be talking with the art director, Jennifer Banghen, and I apologize if I pronounce that wrong. This might be a silent H, or there might be two silent H's. Again, we're thankful for her time. We appreciate DDA and all their help setting this up. It's very cool of them. We really had a great show the other day with Sing discussing Flaked and the cinematography of that show. The Beguiled is a remake. It's also, it's said in the credits here, based on a novel. Now, what I like to do here sometimes for you new listeners, new guests, sometimes I like to over-research, but then for me that makes the show, I wouldn't say less fun, but it's kind of like, okay, I ask a question, but I already kind of know the answer, so I end up kind of just sitting here. And then sometimes I purposely kind of undercut the research, and it's not to be a lazy host, it's because I want to have some fun, and I want to learn from the guests too, and I don't want to just basically be, it's really, I just don't want the audience having all the fun. I won't lie. There's no reason to lie. We're on air, and The Beguiled, I'm going to let our guests discuss what it's about, because I always find it interesting when talk show hosts have a guest on and start telling the audience what it's about when they have someone right there who's in it, who helped create it, who was a big part of doing, whether it was acting in it or shooting it or directing it, and they choose to just sit there and read off of their PR sheets. So before I bring in the guests, so that's something that for our show, we like to figure if someone is online who made the film, they probably have a better idea of exactly how to explain it than us. And a lot of the times IMDb has the, not the coolest tagline or synopsis, but it just has one that doesn't apply. So I see we have our caller. Welcome. Are you with us?
I am. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Now, I don't want to mess up your name. So how is your last name pronounced? I don't know if there's silent letters.
There's a lot of silent letters. Dagon, Jennifer Dagon.
Oh, okay. Jennifer. Okay, and do you like to just go by Jennifer? Is that fine?
That's fine, yeah.
Okay. So if you don't mind me asking, where is your name from? That's interesting.
It's Iranian.
Oh, perfect. I love it. I absolutely love when we have guests from other cultures. We won't even get into what's going on in the world right now, but I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
I never wanted this show to just be L.A. and New York, and so that's fantastic. First of all, this is a very basic question, and as you know, we always got to do a couple of the cliche questions for the audience. Art director, production designer, what is the main difference for those out there that don't know?
Well, the production designer's the head of the whole art department. They hire me, and then, when I'm art directing, so they hire the art director, and the art director's kind of their right hand. So the production designer works more closely and directly. There's the three creative heads of a film, so it's the director, the cinematographer, and the production designer. And together they kind of determine the overarching umbrella concept and goals and style and look or mood or what they want to achieve with the film. And then the art director is under the production designer and directly oversees construction, painting, scenic, graphics, research budgets, green locations, and works with the tech department and props to kind of make sure that all the details are filled in, that the goals are achieved, and kind of hires a lot of the department heads that make it happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. So are you basically, it almost sounds like you're like a unit production manager for the production designer.
In a way, there's kind of twofold, and it also always depends on the designer that you're working with. So some designers are very hands-on and controlling of all the details top-down creatively. Then the art director is relegated to more of a production, like a kind of project manager person. And then there's the designers who are more collaborative creatively and want a partner in the creation of it. So luckily Anne Ross is the second kind. That's why it's fun to art direct for her because you actually have a stake in the creation of it, the look of it. She's really open and she wants your input on ideas for how to accomplish just, you know, the overall goals. So art directing for her is fun because you get to actually create well.
Well, that's really cool, and thanks for explaining that so well, because
sure.
I know, like I always say, I would never be a first AD or a second AD, or couldn't imagine being on the film set and just doing paperwork in a trailer. Like, it would just kill me. Mm-hmm. I would rather, mm-hmm. I don't know, I'd rather, like, be in an emergency room getting stitches.
But, you know, good ADs, really, it's like, there's nothing more creative than a good AD who can kind of take all these puzzle pieces and make them work. It kind of blows my mind when how they can figure it out, you know, after
the first AD,
it's crazy.
Definitely orchestrating a giant jazz band.
Yeah.
Now, we're obviously here to discuss The Beguiled, but just so the audience knows, Jennifer has an extensive list of television credits. Briefly, I mean, I know every show is different, and I've
mm-hmm.
been a PA in television and in the office and on set, so I know everything can, but is there some bottom line differences in the way an executive producer is totally different in television as opposed to a film? Is there any kind of differences with television, the way the art director dynamic works with a film?
I think there's differences for an art director. I mean, in television, it's just it's a lot more fast-paced, and it's episode by episode. So there's just not a ton of time to get too deep into things, unfortunately. Which goes both ways. I mean, you don't always need to. TV doesn't always need to. But in my experience in TV, it's just so fast-paced and the train is moving. There's the beautiful thing about film is you have a prep time where you can really sink your teeth in and delve deep into, say, period research or character studies or, you know, just color schemes and theory and lighting moods and trying to figure out how to complement the arch of the story with the look or the feel or the colors or the lighting or all these different things, you know, how full you make a room, how modern, how antiquated, all the different bits. And you don't have a ton of prep time in TV. So it's really a run and gun, which is a different kind of, like, it kind of triggers a different part of your brain. They're both fun, but I would say that they're definitely different.
Okay. Now, to start out with The Beguiled, and we don't have to mention any of your television credits, but you just so happen that you've these two a television credit of yours and The Beguiled have given you the chance to work on two historical things, one being with Sofia Coppola and you guys winning the Palme d'Or The other one being, I won't get into what it is, but what is it like to be a filmmaker and be doing your craft and be a part of a historical project like The Beguiled?
I mean, it's exciting. It's also nerve-wracking because I think, you know, films are so finicky and the stars really have to align in a lot of ways. And there's so many steps along the path where it could go wrong. And you don't always know that it's going right. I think it depends if you're how obsessive compulsive or perhaps self-judgmental you are, which I probably fall into both those categories. So you're probably, you know, if you're me, you're along the way and you're thinking you're failing the whole time. You know, you're like, feel like you're kind of pretending to keep your head above water. And I don't mean with workload. I just mean with, I don't know, just with, I think being a creative person or an artist, you kind of, or at least I do, I kind of always hate what I do as soon as I do it. Like, it sounds great. And then you do it and you're like, ugh, not really. And you're hoping no one else notices. And then I have to really take a big step back. And that takes a while to be able to look at it a little more objectively and say, okay, well, actually, that was the right decision. Or, you know, given the options, it did go in the right direction. And I think that feeling did translate in the subtle thing that I spent way too long, you know, working out. You kind of obsess over it all a little. So it's nice when, in the end, you get a little validation from the outside world that you're not a total failure.
Right. Someone other than grandma.
My family's amazing. You can't believe anything they say. They love everything I do. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank God for them. But, you know.
Exactly. I produced this awful samurai movie. It's actually on Amazon Prime. I still don't know how, but. And my grandma would just be like, it's so good. And I'd be like, you don't like violence. You don't like samurai. How could, I mean, and this is the woman who taught me about Casablanca and Some Like It Hot. You know, who was just Sidney Poitier. And I was just like, how did you even sit through that? And let alone buy a cop. Anyways. It's not spoiling anything that it's a period piece. And I haven't watched any of the trailers. I felt kind of like a bonehead because since I knew this was on the festival circuit, I had jumped to that assumption that it wasn't playing in theaters. So I told DDA, I said, well, it just played the LA Film Festival. I probably wouldn't have gotten tickets anyways with all the, you know how LA and New York screenings are just basically for whoever doesn't need to be at the screening anyways. No offense. So the guy was like, what are you talking about? It's playing in the theater. So I was really, really happy because I almost said, well, just never mind. So what I was interested in was, since you had mentioned this kind of subtle differences of production designer, art director, how does the research get divvied up in terms of how much you have to know about that period and about all those things in that period?
Well, you know, The Beguiled had been on and off for quite some time before it was properly greenlit and we all technically started. So Anne Ross, the designer, and Sophia, who worked together for, I think, maybe almost 20 years, a long time, they had done mood boards and picture polls and reference and research quite extensively for what they wanted of the look and the feel. But then what I ended up doing and what our team, when we got on the ground in New Orleans, we did a lot of the more specific technical research. So, you know, when women were sewing in this period, what were the tools or how did it look or what was the equipment? When they drew, what did they draw with? When they were doing household chores, what were the tools they used? the dinner table setting, fancy versus formal versus informal. What were the items that were on the table, and then we had to relate it back, everything to relate it back to our story. So, for instance, the table setting, these women had been on their own for quite a few years. The war had been going on for a long time. The men were gone, the slaves were gone, they were left totally on their own and isolated. So we kind of imagined that they would have sold off a lot of their finery already. So the table setting, we tried to make pretty basic. And we had to decide what pieces they would have held on to and what pieces they would have sold. That went along with hardware in the houses. So we tried to get the period-specific hardware for the region and for the time and for that kind of socioeconomic level that they had been at when the war began. But then we decided that probably they would have sold off a lot of their fine things. So we switched out the hardware for some more basic enamel as opposed to, more decorative pieces. And so you do the research, and then you always retrofit it to your story.
Now, does that, I worked on a film in Hawaii, The Descendants, and it was very interesting because I'm from Hawaii, and that was, tell people if they want to see a movie about Hawaii, that's the most, I'm speaking of the production design and the art direction, that is the most, you would have thought that they all grew up there. I don't even know how research alone nailed the design of the film. I always look at how something was simple. Like one day it was just like they needed to have the extras placed right and the towels. And I thought, well, this must have been a fun day of research. You just sat on the beach and looked where people sat. So in some of the scenes where it was just very simple, props were simple, is there a kind of more of a challenge because you want to have the simplicity captured, or is there the kind of like, okay, we have, I mean, you're always doing your best, so we'll put that aside. But you're thinking, okay, well, there's only four things we have to get right here, as opposed to 15 different things that are on the wall, and would this have been here, and like.
I think that helps a lot, but I don't know that it always relates to, how many props are, because you really, at least with this and being period, you really deep into what they would have had. And is it machine-made? Would it be handmade? It would have been, handmade then because machine-made wasn't around. And what can we get that's closest, or can we make something that looks like it? And I think what helped us on this one was that there weren't a ton of locations. So the fact that it didn't have a massive budget, you always want more than you have, and you always feel like you don't have enough. But in the end, the fact that we really had one main interior and one main exterior house let us focus all of our labor and resources and time on those two places to make them right, instead of kind of the feeling of having too small of a pat of butter and spreading across a giant piece of toast. If we had 35 locations that we had to address, there's always something to address, even if it's not contributing to the film. You have to address something that would deter from it. So you have to take down a sign, or you have to remove a structure, or you have to block, something that can't be moved, and you're spending time and money and labor on those things as opposed to towards the look of the film. And luckily, we had these two main locations that we spent all of our time and energy on. So I think it helped a lot. It was very contained.
Yeah, I thought you guys did a fantastic job of the amount of locations. I mean, that's obviously, there's always the standard Breakfast Club, 12 Angry Men, the films that just you wonder how in the heck it stayed interesting. And what I really liked about it was I had stopped paying attention to that, and then at the end I was kind of taken back by, wow, that didn't move around. But before that slips into any spoilers, a question I love to know, and then I just have my few closing questions if that's cool with you. I like to know do you have a favorite or a best lesson where you got back to your room and you were just like, oh my gosh, had I not done the Beguiled, I would not have learned this or known this, and gosh, I'm so glad I did this project.
For this movie specifically, I could say that, I mean, it was a really nice set to be on. Some sets are just so unpleasant, and there's really just unpleasant. There's
I know, because I've been on them, so I don't know what you mean. Where.
And there's cliques, and there's kind of like, you know, the cool group and the not cool group, where there's, you know, people stick to themselves. And on this one, it really felt like a one big team, which is what it's supposed to be. I mean, I can honestly say that I worked with almost every department on the film in a nice, like, respectful, positive, creative, and problem-solving way, supportive way. It wasn't like us against them, which unfortunately happens sometimes in crews. And that, in my opinion, starts at the top. It starts with the director and the producers. And if you feel like if you feel like you have to hide some cash in your budget so that just to cover your butt when you know someone else is going to drop the ball and you have to pick it up, then it just gets a little ugly. And on this one, that wasn't the case ever, for me anyway, in my apartment. I could go to the grips and they would help me out solving a problem that I just didn't have the manpower to do, whether it was, you know, hiding their lighting rigs in the kitchen, or I could go to the electrics and say, what if we did it this way instead of that way, because that would mean I would be able to do this, not that. I think this is a lot better. And we would all figure it out. And I really believe that comes from the top down. Sophia, even when, before I got to New Orleans, when I started the hiring process for the people in our department, Anne made it very clear that she runs a calm, quiet, respectful set, and we shouldn't bring any disturbers in. Do you know what I mean? No one too rough or aggressive, or who's not aware of the project we're doing and the goals. Because also, these are hard jobs. You know, this wasn't, you have long hours in tough conditions and a lot being asked of you all the time. That's every film. So on something where, I mean, this wasn't a huge budget, paydays weren't massive, we weren't the biggest show in town. If people feel like they're doing you a favor by doing the job with you, then that's bad, because their heart's not going to be in it and they're not going to be a true team member. You know what I mean? They're a partner. And I think that tone that came from the top down from the beginning on really actually helped me to, I had one of the best crews I've ever worked with. I mean, real artists, from the construction coordinator to the charge scenic to the lead greensman, like true artists. And even so, as artists, they could still create their art and work with me to ensure that we could get the most for our money. So it wasn't reckless. They could help me prioritize. When we had, you know, 15 things we needed to do on the exterior of the building to make it feel right, you know, we had to hang moss in all of the trees and climb vines up all the pillars and create a period vegetable garden that looked like it was kind of not terribly well tended, and create a rose garden that was totally overgrown and unpruned because there's no one there to do it. And we were working on an estate that had a beautiful, perfect, short, bright green lawn, like a golf course that was lovely, but not what we needed. They could help me, say, if I came up with a ton of reference images and ideas and did some sketches and said, what if we, you know, do 4 20-foot long runs of fence that are all handmade. One is with sticks, one is with vines, one is this way, and they all are period appropriate. And we could move them so that if we need to block this or we need to hide that, and they could say, well, if you do it this way and that way, then you can get more or less. And it was just really good teamwork. I had a great, great collaboration from it.
Well, no, I mean, that's fantastic. And I definitely, I've I've produced indie features, and so obviously I had to be one of the nice guys. But yeah, I've been on a few sets where, you know, like you were saying, just kind of the departments seem like they're against each other, and it just kind of seems like, why are you here? I understand you're here because you're getting paid $500 a day if that's your department, but like, what do you even? And you know, The Descendants was the exact opposite, and it was kind of one of those films where, like a, you know, a situation you were in with The Beguiled, where it's kind of like, you know, there was some just like a production coordinator who was just busting like total ego and being rude, and it's like, that's kind of weird because the director is very well known and has like 10 Oscar nominations, and he like lets me watch the monitor with him, and he like had known me three days, so I was just kind of like, you hand out call sheets and you're being rude. Like, I don't even like how that sounds arrogant, but it just kind of, that's the fun. And I guess makes you appreciate the good sets more. My
it
last
really does.
Two questions.
It makes you not want to ever get on a bad set again.
Oh, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Because, it really does prove that theory. It took me a bunch of, before I found one like that. But I just always had this theory where it's like, there's absolutely no reason to be rude. It's like you're getting paid some departments obscene amounts of money if you're lucky enough to be, which people earn it and deserve it, so we don't knock this. Some people have positions where the rest of your life you're paid for a job that you did 25 years ago. You know, as opposed to crew who, when their paycheck stopped, it stopped. So it's kind of just like all around good money, and you're fed all day, and you're working on a movie that's going to come to theaters. So you really shouldn't complain like you're in an office, like shredding papers. Back to my little high horse soapbox, which I'm not like, two things I'd love to know. The first one is, if you get any budget, you get a director you like, what is a genre you would love to be an art director on?
I really like kind of just children's fantasy isn't right. I don't even know what to call it. I mean, for instance, A Wrinkle in Time. What would that be?
Children.
I don't know what genre that is. A Wrinkle in Time, or
or
something
right.
I don't know what that genre is called, but something that's a little bit fantasy and a little bit whimsical that I don't know what that genre is, but
I've never actually heard someone refer that to as a genre either.
It's not children's movies. I mean, I can't wait to see A Wrinkle in Time, and I'm not a child, so I don't know.
That's interesting. I'm going to Google that, and maybe you might have come up with a genre name that's not there yet. So you can credit yourself for more. And then, of course, the other question is the opposite is, does it matter what you owe rent, what credit card bill you have? There's no way in heck you're going to be an art director on this genre.
Oh. I don't know if I might be inventing a new genre name, but like a dude bro movie.
A dude bro movie.
Is that a genre? I'm not.
Yeah,
into
no, it
one.
Is the bro man movies. Yeah, the bro man movies.
Is that like a bromance? That's not what I mean. I don't know. Just I think they're on their way out, maybe, because men are more complex than those movies give them credit for as well. But I guess
thank
just
you.
Kind of the yeah, it's true. I mean, I think.
Yeah, thank you. We do more than just drink and talk about girls. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, and want to, you know, make fun of each other with dick jokes and that whole thing. I probably would stay away from.
Okay, so no Hangover 4 for Jennifer coming out anytime soon.
You know, the Hangover movies are really funny.
Yeah, I know they are. No,
they're funny. I mean, I would do a Hangover movie.
Yeah. Well, is that Hangover? Or you'd work with Bradley Cooper. Okay. Well, No, that's the, you know, what I wanted to say was the, we had this film, and I'm just plugging it for the show. It's called The Wedding Invitation, and mm-hmm. it's an indie film, and it's, and basically it's the opposite, to where it's kind of like the females have the role of what you would see in like that Broman movie, and it's brilliant because mm-hmm. this could, men could sit down and watch this, women could sit down and watch this, the lead actress mm-hmm. wrote, produced, and directed it. So mm-hmm. I only mentioned it because it was finally, you know, she was told women could never be in these kind of movies where mm-hmm. they're the ones mm-hmm. having fun, and they're the ones. So it's kind of cool now that it is making a change, and it's showing that both people can sure. have the fun. And so, yeah. So the last thing is there anything
you'd like
to... I
guess I
meant
by the bro dude movies was more that, like, that doesn't have one female character in it that I could possibly even fractionally relate to.
Oh, okay. Right.
I mean, where the...
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, so The Wedding Invitation sounds great.
Yeah, no, it's totally, it's awesome, because it also, and I really want to thank you again for saying that there's more to males, because that's a whole other, you know, podcast, but that's just something that has so come up lately, and I do wonder how it's going to affect film and affect television
uh-huh.
and affect what characters come out and don't, and so, yeah, I just want to say I'm an ally, is I guess what the new term is.
Okay, great.
So, we want to thank you for your time, and is there anything, the way we always end our episode is if there's any film project coming up, personal project, anything that the guests would like to plug, feel free, and if not, that's cool too.
No, there's nothing to plug right now. I think I'm just kind of waiting to see what comes next and trying to pick it wisely.
All right, cool. Well, that's, again, we thank you for coming on, and this is...
thanks for having
again,
me.
Again, everyone, check... It. Oh, very welcome. Again, everyone, check out The Beguiled, and it is in theaters now. Don't think that because it's on the festival circuit, it's not out there. So you have a wonderful day, Jennifer, and take
thank
care.
Thank you. You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. That was great. I love doing these interviews. I'm about to go into hyperspaz mode because I get so jazzed doing the show. So I'm going to get off the air before I start bumbling over my words. Thank you again to DDA and setting that up, and to Jennifer. We love talking with all our guests, so we appreciate that. Have a wonderful day, everyone, and make sure and watch a good movie.